common sense commentary on politics, culture, and current events. If it's on your mind, it's In the News. And now, In the News, with your host, Mike Dakak.
So the big news this week is that apparently the globalists have turned on Joe Biden. I don't know if turned on is the most accurate way to phrase it. I mean, they're not really allies with anyone. To turn on someone implies that you were once allies, right? And globalists are not really allies with anyone. There's them, and then there's all of us. And we're all in one big basket, right? Talk about basket of deplorables. That's how they see us. We're all in one big basket, white, black, green, yellow, Democrat, Republican, conservative, liberal. They have their side, and everyone else is on the other side. And so that's kind of why we all have to band together. So I don't know if you know, saying that globalists have turned on Joe Biden is the most accurate way to put it. That's number one. Number two, it's not really so much that they've turned on them. It's just that they've become more adamant in their hedging. You see, they always have to make sure that they don't lose. No matter what the outcome is of certain events, they have to make sure that they are in a position to win no matter what happens, or at the very least, to not lose ground. And so all this stuff about Biden comes out, and Hunter Biden's laptop and all these sordid details about the family business, not so much about Hunter's personal life, but about the influence peddling operation that the Bidens were apparently involved in. If that all comes out now and Biden wins, well, then he's weakened, right? And he goes limping into his presidency. And the predicate has been laid for his impeachment, or life being made miserable for him if he decides not to play ball, not with Republicans again, with the globalists. This is the leverage that they're going to have. And if Trump wins, well, then they can say, well, how could you say there's some kind of liberal bias in the media? There's some outlets that are liberal, but other outlets, like the ones that are publishing these stories, well, they can't possibly be liberal, because if Biden lost, they're going to say, well, this is why Biden lost. The New York Post single-handedly delivered the election to President Trump. So there can't be some kind of globalist plot that controls all mainstream media. I mean, apparently this Biden stuff, this is how it's going to work. I mean, apparently this Biden stuff has been out there for quite some time. We're just hearing about it now. It's just coming to the forefront now. Well, it makes sense that the Trump campaign would want to hold it until now, right? Rudy Giuliani's apparently had this laptop for several months, something on the order of a year, I think. And so it makes sense that the Trump campaign would want to hold on to it until now. This is their October surprise. I mean, globalists have had the globalist October surprise has been running since about March. It's been running for 3 years, really. But it's been running in earnest for several months, not just the month of October. I mean, there's been, how many, 3-4 million books written in recent weeks and months about President Trump? One of the first ladies, Melania Trump, one of her confidants, records a phone conversation that they had a couple of years ago. And she writes a book about it, just happens to be released this fall. I mean, Trump's niece came out and published a book the other week or the other month about how President Donald Trump is the worst person in the world, and my father was on life support, and Donald Trump walked into the hospital and personally pulled the plug. I'm not making fun of family drama. Every family has their drama. Nobody wants their dirty laundry aired out for public consumption. But this incident, such as it was, happened 20 or 30 years ago, if I understand it correctly. And the book about it was published a month before the election. This is how you know that it's part of a grander scheme, that there are other forces at play here. I mean, for all we know, the October surprise was giving Donald Trump COVID on purpose at that Amy Coney Barrett Supreme Court Justice announcement event. It just so happens everybody there came down with COVID within a couple of days. And now, though, he looks like he's even healthier than he was before contracting the virus, if that's at all possible. But the globalists have known about this Biden material for quite some time. And there's a story there. No matter what liberals will have you believe, or what they hoped and what they choose to believe themselves, there's a real story here. And now we know, by the way, that there was a quid pro quo, and it came from the Bidens. Every accusation is a confession, folks. Newly released emails reveal that the Ukrainian energy company Burisma, they wanted political favors, and they expected political favors in return for their relationship with the Biden family. Specifically, what they wanted was the shutting down of investigations of Burisma by other Ukrainian government officials. You see, Hunter Biden was given a seat on the board at Burisma. Burisma is a Ukrainian gas company, energy company. And Hunter Biden, son of Joe Biden, is given a seat on the board at Burisma, and he's paid $50,000 a month. Now, Hunter Biden has no background, no experience, nothing that qualifies him to sit on a board of a Ukrainian gas company. He has about as much business sitting on the board of a Ukrainian gas company as you and I do, except for one simple fact and one important fact. He happens to be Joe Biden's son. And so he's given this cushy job at $50,000 a month, despite not having any experience or any background or any training in the sector that this company belongs in. And Vice President Joe Biden famously brags that he threatened to withhold $1 billion in loan guarantees from Ukraine. This is in early 2016. He's telling the story in 2018, but what happened in 2016. And he says that he threatened to withhold $1 billion in loan guarantees from Ukraine if they didn't fire their prosecutor general at the time, a fellow by the name of Viktor Shokin. Now, Ukraine's prosecutor general is kind of like it's analogous to our attorney general. So think Bill Barr, right? So think if someone pressured President Trump to fire Bill Barr, it was that kind of a thing. Shokin, their prosecutor general in Ukraine, was investigating Burisma, this gas company. And he had opened a case against its founder, a fellow by the name of Nikolai Zaklevsky. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. This guy, Zaklevsky, the founder of Burisma, had, among other things, granted his company, Burisma, permits to drill for oil and gas in Ukraine while he was the Minister of Ecology and Natural Resources. So he's a minister, he's an acting minister in the Ukrainian government, and he's doing his company favors. So imagine if the CEO of ExxonMobil suddenly became the Secretary of Agriculture or something, and he granted ExxonMobil permits to drill on endangered land or something like that. Now, Democrats and the left have maintained that Shokin was not actively investigating Burisma at the time he was fired. We know now that that's not true. Shokin himself has come out and said, yes, I was investigating. They also say for the longest time, that there was quote-unquote international consensus that Shokin was corrupt and had to go. We know that that's not the case either, or at least now we know that that was more of a red herring than actual legitimate grounds to see him go. And so we have a recently released email that was found on this laptop that once belonged to Hunter Biden, and it shows that a representative from Burisma is writing to Hunter Biden, and he's saying that the services, quote-unquote, that Hunter Biden's consulting firm is providing them weren't clearly enough defined. And so he writes in this email, and he says, you know, he's suggesting ways in which they can clear this up, and he says the scope of work should also include organization of a visit of a number of widely recognized and influential current and or former U.S. policymakers to Ukraine. And the goal should be, the ultimate purpose is the way he phrases it, is to close down any cases against Nikolai in Ukraine. Now, the email was sent in November 2015. It's soon after that Biden finds himself in Ukraine. And he's telling the story, and you've seen this video 1,000 times. I just put a fresh copy of it up on the site this week, so you can check it out there if you need to look at it again or refresh your memory. But Biden is sitting there in 2018, and he's describing these events. And he's sitting there, and he's got his suit on, and he's being very kind of off the cuff and very, you know, nonchalant about the whole thing. And he's talking to, you know, this globalist crowd at the Council of Foreign Relations in Washington, D.C. I assume it was in Washington, D.C. It could have been in New York, but I think it was in D.C. And he's saying, I go to Ukraine and I tell them, listen, I'm going to withhold. You're not getting the $1 billion in loan guarantees until you fire this guy, until you fire this prosecutor general, until you fire Shokin. And he says, they look at me and they say, well, you don't have the authority to do that. You're not the president. And Biden says, oh, yeah, well, then call the president right now and see which side he's on, that, you know, that kind of thing. And Biden is telling the story, and he's being very folksy about it. And he's describing this international shakedown operation. And he says, lo and behold, they fired the guy. And, you know, I gave him 6 hours. I was going to be on a flight in 6 hours out of the country. I gave him 6 hours, and lo and behold, they fired the guy. Now, we have recently released audio tapes of then Vice President Biden and then Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko. And they've been made public now by a Ukrainian lawmaker. And they document this quid pro quo. So you have the Ukrainian president, Poroshenko, is on the phone with Biden, and you can hear him both plain as day in this recording. And Poroshenko says, we got rid of the prosecutor general. And Biden says, well, I'm a man of my word. I'm quoting him here. He says, I'm a man of my word. And now that the prosecutor general is in place, we're ready to move forward in signing that new $1 billion loan guarantee, Biden asserts. So let's just see if we have this straight. Biden withheld financial aid to Ukraine, aid which they desperately needed to fight their war with Russia, as we've been repeatedly reminded over the last year or so. He did this in exchange for a political favor. Now, isn't that the exact same thing Donald Trump was impeached for? Every accusation is a confession, folks. That's the way it is with the globalists. So, okay, this all makes sense that the Trump campaign would hold on to such a thing and release it right here with a couple of weeks to go in the election. But why would the globalists play along? Or even if they you know, couldn't stop it, why would such a recording of a phone, who would have such a recording of a phone conversation? Who would be in a position to release it? Okay, so even if you want to say the globalists are not responsible for that, why would they not fight it or have something ready for it? Maybe they just thought, you know, calling it Russian disinformation would be enough to have people dismiss it, that they could easily have a replay of 2016. We're slowly finding out here, folks, that everything Republicans have been saying for the last several years has been true. The story is Ukraine. It's not Russia. Hunter Biden was getting money from foreign governments. Hunter Biden wanted $10 million from Chinese officials just for quote-unquote introductions. Well, what do you think the next question is going to be? Introductions to who? I mean, the Chinese aren't going to pay $10 million for an introduction to the latest girl Hunter Biden is dating, would you? They want introductions to high-ranking American officials, starting with, and perhaps especially, Vice President at the time, Joe Biden. And we've dismissed Republicans this whole time, and I'll speak for myself here, as tinfoil hat-wearing, you know, conspiracy theorists, when they were right this whole time. I mean, the story, folks, of 2020, when the history books are written, yes, it's going to be COVID, and yes, it's going to be the protest, and yes, it's going to be the election, whatever the outcome is, and yes, it's going to be the civil unrest. The story is going to be the globalists making their move. Yes, that's true. But the real story is going to be the underestimating they've done of the vast public. I mean, like I've said before, go to any YouTube video just to kind of do this little informal sociological test here. Go to any YouTube video and see what the public sentiment is. Comments are running 2, 3, 4, 5 to 1 now against globalists and whatever that scheme, that particular video is laying out. People are waking up. And the Walt Disney Company, for example, has updated warnings that it's going to be placing on their content through their streaming service, Disney Plus. Disney Plus is like their version of Netflix, the Netflix streaming service. And so they're going to slap certain movies like Peter Pan and Fantasia, the movies we've all kind of grew up with these disclaimers now. And the updated version of the disclaimer is going to read, this program, and it's kind of like a warning, this program includes negative depictions and mistreatments of people and cultures. And we want to acknowledge its harmful impact, and we want to learn from it, and we want to do this. And Disney is committed to creating stories with inspirational and aspirational themes from the human experience around the world. And along with this warning that they're slapping on movies now, they released a very slick kind of video and they uploaded it to YouTube, and the videos has all these, you know, diverse characters on it, and they're not characters, they're actually human beings, and they're saying, oh, we applaud what Disney is doing, and we're doing this and we're doing that. And Disney says it has enlisted a group of experts from outside the company. I mean, that YouTube video, first of all, it's got like 150 downvotes and only 20 or 30 upvotes. This is what I mean about public sentiment. People know. And by the way, I am not white. I am of a minority ethnic heritage. My parents were born and raised in Egypt. I was born and raised here. And so Disney says it has enlisted a group of experts from outside the company to help it assess its content and ensure it accurately represents its global audience. You see, it's a global audience. It's all of us. They're in one camp, and the rest of us are all in one camp, the other camp. There are no countries anymore. There are no borders. There are no walls. There's the globalists, and if you're not with them, if you're not one of them, then you're one of the rest of them. You're part of the rabble. And so this YouTube video got like 150 downvotes and only 20 or 30 upvotes. People are waking up. And I say all that to say that not every one of those downvotes was a white person. There was tons of minorities. And if they had loud comments on that video, we would probably know that to be true. But they've turned the comments off. I mean, think for a second. If the comments were positive, why would they turn them off? You know, we got a... Speaking of conspiracy theorists and globalist schemes, the drug company Pfizer announced this week that they are already in production with their vaccine, and they've already manufactured several hundred thousand doses of that vaccine, and they're already being stockpiled, and they're ready to be rolled out worldwide if clinical trials are a success, quote unquote. Now, they haven't gotten approval yet. There's been no approval for vaccines. There's been no candidate that has gotten final approval, that has passed all the trials and all the tests. We don't have final approval for a vaccine, and they're already in production. Now, do you think they would have started production if there was a chance it wasn't going to be approved in the end? They hope to have 100 million doses by the end of the year. They say they have several hundred thousand already. Now, my expertise is not in vaccine manufacturing, but if their goal is to have 100 million doses and they only have several hundred thousand right now, they've got a long way to go. That several hundred thousand that's already been manufactured is much more likely to be several million doses that have already been manufactured. You think they'd be spending millions of dollars manufacturing doses of this quote-unquote vaccine if there was a chance it was all going to have to be flushed down the toilet because it wasn't approved? Not for a second. Now, I was reading that story and I thought back to all the way back to 2002 in the run up to the Iraq War, mid 2002 all the way to early 2003, right up to the start of the war. And the Bush administration in 2002 started transporting U.S. troops to Iraq. They weren't actually in Iraq yet because we hadn't crossed the border into Iraq, but they were going to Kuwait, staging ground. And tanks were being shipped, and airplanes were being shipped, and supplies were being shipped, and artillery, and guns, and ammunition, and all the rest of it. And they were still going through the motions, the Bush administration, Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and the whole neocon globalist gang. They were still going through the motions of, well, you know, this is not a done deal, and we're still working with Iraq, and we're going to go to the UN, and we're going to get international support, and we're going to build a coalition, and we're going to make the case, and Saddam Hussein is going to have every opportunity to... And somebody stood up in the middle of all that and said, this is nonsense. Do you think for a moment that they would be spending tens of millions of dollars transporting these troops and all these supplies and all this equipment and all this artillery halfway around the world if there was a chance that they were just going to wind up bringing them all back in a few weeks? The decision's already been made. The decision's already been made here. We're going to be made to get this vaccine, which is worrisome because these vaccines are not even designed to be effective. You know, William Hazeltine, a fellow by the name of William Hazeltine, who was a University of Harvard professor for several decades, he says the protocols that these pharmaceutical companies are following in their vaccine trials are not nearly rigorous enough. He researched them and he said they're not nearly good enough. He says, in fact, they were designed to succeed. They're not honest trials. He says the prevention of infection must be a critical endpoint. And the only thing they're really testing for here is severity of symptoms. He says the prevention of infection is not even a criteria for the success of any of these vaccines. He says we all expect an effective vaccine to prevent serious illness if infected. But the only thing they're trying to do is to moderate symptoms, which may be as mild as cough or headache. He says, in other words, these vaccine trials are testing whether or not this vaccine prevents common cold symptoms, not if it prevents infection. So that's what's happening here. But the great part is, I say all that to say, no one wants to take it. That's why you have Bill Gates popping up in interviews and in videos every couple of weeks saying, yeah, you know, this vaccine hesitancy, as he puts it, that's the new the phrase of the month now. Vaccine hesitancy, this is quite troubling. He doesn't understand why nobody trusts him. People don't trust Bill Gates because they're starting to wake up, just like they're starting to wake up about big tech. And in this week's censorship example here, you know, you can't even look at your computer screen the wrong way now without Facebook trying to ban you. But you have Jamie Ullman, who's a radio host out in St. Louis. He comes to D.C. the other week, last week, and he organizes a march in Washington, D.C. That march attracted hundreds of Trump supporters. They marched from the National Monument to the White House. Now, a lot of the marchers were African-American or minority. And a video that's quite surreal, actually, a video of the event shows marchers in Ullman's protest walking past Black Lives Matter protesters, who are mostly white, and Ullman's protesters, who are mostly minority, are chanting, "We love Trump." And they're marching past these Black Lives Matter protesters, who are mostly white, and they're just standing there stunned. Nobody can quite believe the scene that's playing out before their eyes. The video gets posted on Facebook. It receives about 21,000 views. On his flight home to St. Louis, Ullman discovers that he's locked out of his Facebook account for bullying and harassment. Now, who exactly was he bullying and harassing? They don't make that clear. But any information they don't want you to know gets banned. Now, the group that's responsible for banning that stuff is called the Hate Speech Engineering Group. We found out this week from a Facebook insider that spoke to the New York Post. And the team members who are in this group, they're all PhDs, and they teach Facebook. And by the way, we also found out that they're bringing a lot of Chinese nationals in to run this censorship group. And so they teach Facebook software how to rank stories so that certain content ends up at the top of your newsfeed, while other content, quote, shows up dead last. And optimizing these rankings earns members of this team bonuses at the end of the year. And the goal, the insider says, is to root out borderline content. So they say that, you know, they save, he kind of implies that they save the banning and the outright deletion of content for the most extreme cases. What they want to do instead, he says, is that content is a little too conservative, they just downrank. So you can't tell it's censored. But we can all tell it's censored, can't we? And when a YouTube video you're watching suddenly has more likes than dislikes, when it was the exact opposite by several thousand just the day before, when Twitter calls something unsafe, when nobody is debating whether the information is real, like the Hunter Biden emails and the laptop, you know you're being censored. And you're just not going to put up with it anymore. And that's going to be the real story of 2020. The fact that we're not putting up with the globalist schemes any longer. Well, that's our show for today. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any comments on any of the issues we discussed, drop me a line. You can reach me at comments@itnshow.com. That's comments@itnshow.com. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Until next time, take care of yourselves and each other.
If it's on your mind, it's in the news. Subscribe to In the News on both iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. This has been In the News.